Hey, Paul, I got a joke.
Oh, okay, lay it on me.
So Paul Wheaton's sitting in a bar getting drunk, kind of moping about. And I walk into the bar and I say, I see you in your drunken state. And I say, why are you in here on such a beautiful day getting drunk? And Paul says, some things you just cannot explain. So what happened that is so terrible, Paul? And Paul says, well, if you must know, today I was sitting by my cow milking her. Just as I get the bucket about full, she took her left leg and kicked it over. Well, that's not so bad, Paul. What's the big deal? Some things you just cannot explain. So what happened? Well, so I started milking her again and got the bucket half full, and she took her right leg and kicked it over. So I just tied her legs to the posts so she wouldn't kick it anymore. I said, well, that sounds like that should have worked for you. So why are you so sad? Well, so I'm milking her again, and she takes her tail and whips the bucket and knocks it over again. So then I stand up to tie her tail up. My pants fall down, and Jocelyn walks in. Ha 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 ha.
Okay. All right. So that's my story.
All right.
So when you started telling the joke, I was trying to not say like, I actually don't like the taste of alcohol, so I don't really drink, so it's hard for me to be drunk.
Okay, bad joke, wrong person.
Yeah, well, that does kind of go along the whole thing about Montana, where men are men and sheep are nervous.
Yeah,
yeah. So, all right, well, good enough then. Thank you so much, Mr. Wallingford. That was. Different.
All right. It was worth a shot.
Okay, so once again, we have with us Josiah Wallingford, who has been overhauling all the blog stuff and a bunch of the podcast stuff and getting the videos into places where they've never been before and doing all kinds of things for the Empire. And on top of that, has listened to all of the podcasts, and so therefore has an idea of what I have not yet talked about, and that is expressed in his brain as curiosity, and so then he comes up with questions for me.
Yes.
So
lately the biggest question that's come to my mind, and it also affects me personally, is that what does one do when they find out about permaculture, Paul Wheaton, the Permies Empire, but they have nothing to do with it. They're just interested in it, and it sparked enthusiasm inside, and they want to begin. They want to do it. So that's kind of what we talked about on the last podcast.
Right, and it seems like, if I remember correctly, we talked at great length about Early Retirement Extreme and the book Mortgage Free, mm-hmm. and strategies to cut your expenses down to I think it's going to be one of those things where, like, you might be willing to cut your expenses in half over the next few months, and then a year later you might be willing to cut them in half again.
Right.
You know, things of that nature, and then the more you can cut your expenses in half, then the sooner it is that you can develop an exit strategy.
Right.
So of course, there's more than just you in this equation.
Yes, my wife listened to the podcast, and she loved it, which was great. She was ecstatic about it instead of like, you're high, I'm not doing that.
Yeah, over my dead body.
Yeah.
And you're not doing it either, I'm here to tell you.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. That's awesome. So that's great when two people are under the same roof and thinking, this roof sucks, we need a better roof.
Yeah.
And so we talked a lot about wage slave stuff. Does the concept of a wage slave fit with you guys?
Yes. Yeah. Wage slave definitely fits. And so the goal now is to cut as much expenses out of our lives as possible and save as much money as possible so that we and invest that money wisely so that we are no longer wage slaves or debt slaves either.
Right, right. So you're going to build your grub stake, and so like, what kind of timeline have you guys got set up for buying your first piece of land?
The time frame is about five to 7 years.
Okay. And so so you're going to spend for the next 5 to 7 years. You're going to cut your expenses, and of course, at the same time, simultaneously, possibly build your income, and then buy a piece of land outright. And are you going to do the thing where you? I imagine you got 5 to 7 years to figure out like what's going to be the first type of structure that's going to be on the land. Of course, I would recommend a Wafati. But and that would be your crappy shack that you would live in, and then while you're living in your crappy shack, then you can build your tiny house.
Yeah,
which can have additions added to it. It can be remodeled to be bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And then you move into your tiny house, and then you just add on to it periodically as the years pass.
Yes. So,
and then there's never any mortgage.
Yeah. And so right now, I think the long-term goal, what we're going to be doing now is saving as much as money as possible, living as frugally as possible, and learning as much as possible before making a firm decision in the long-term future on where exactly we want our property, what we want on our property, things like that. We need a lot more education in that before making those final decisions. So that 5 years is great opportunity for us to learn about the lifestyle and just start practicing frugal living while we do it.
So maybe a year into the future, you might take a PDC.
Uh-huh.
And maybe sometime over the next 5 to 7 years, you might spend some time living on some farms.
Right.
And building your knowledge set. I mean, of course, there's going to be, you know, books and videos and podcasts and web pages and stuff like that. And hopefully, I mean, it's like, how much gardening experience do the two of you have right now?
We have a container garden in the back in our 4x6 foot patio. And that is an unsuccessful container garden. That is the extent of our personal growing knowledge. Of course, I was raised in an organic farming environment. So I have a little understanding of it, but I have not practiced it myself outside of this small container garden.
Okay. So it would be awesome if you could somehow lay your hands on a quarter of an acre, half an acre, something like that, or be part of a group of people that manage several acres, something like that?
Yeah, so we were looking we have to move to Northern California, so we'll have to search for this when we get there, but we were looking into the idea of the shared, it's like a community farm where you just grow stuff on, you have a little plot on the farm, you grow stuff and you get to eat that food.
Oh, so it's like something where they've got a big farm,
mm-hmm.
but there might be a dozen, I don't know, people or a dozen families on the farm, and each family unit kind of gets a slice of acreage of their own, or
right.
is it?
So the way it works is you get like a quarter acre or half acre, whatever the situation is, and you grow that food, and you get three quarters of that for yourself.
Interesting. Wow. And that's going to be in Northern California.
Yeah.
Oh, that sounds cool.
And so I think I could gain a lot of knowledge by doing that, and I'm getting food. It's just finding the right farm that doesn't use things like pesticides and a lot of rototilling, things like that.
Oh, so the one that you're looking at does use pesticides.
Well, so we're currently in Las Vegas, and then in a month we're moving to Northern California. And, of course, the ones in Las Vegas, if you've got to be really lucky to find a farm in the first place, which we did. But the one that's here is, yeah, it's horrible soil because of, from what I understand, in listening to the podcast, it's horrible soil because of all the rototilling and pesticides. And so it's not the ideal farm we're looking for. We want to eat organic food and beyond organic food.
Okay. Well, I wonder if you were to search at IC.org, if it might have some matches for you for Northern California.
It might. And
okay.
And I'll look into it.
Okay. I know that there are a lot of places where they say, we have land and you can come on by to our land and you can build an eco building. And you get it to live in that eco building rent free for a year. I came across this because I met a guy that was looking for that scenario. He was looking for the land where he would do this.
Right.
And so, but he's really jonesing on the idea of doing it. So, and he was saying this is a fairly common practice. I have not, visited properties where they actually did that and had a bunch of people live in there, but I think it sounds very reasonable and fair.
So this person has a great deal of land, and then they give you a little section of it, and the idea is you move to this piece of land and, like, camp out there while you're building an eco-building, and then you're allowed to live there for 1 year after you've built this eco-building?
Yeah.
So the benefits are that this landowner gets a bunch of eco buildings around their place that they can rent out?
I suppose.
Okay.
Or they could, store stuff in, or they could, move animals into.
Okay.
But my impression, though, I mean, basically, this guy that was telling me about it, he's a student from Cobbville, really loves Cobbville.
Yeah.
And, of course, all of the buildings in Cobbville are really quite small.
Right.
So, individuals or couples live in little cottages that are like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a size, but it's not like they're square, and it's not like they're round, so you can't use the word diameter, and you can't use the word square. They are probably 150 square feet per building. And but they are little pieces of amazing art and beauty, so it might be it might actually turn out to be something that's a really good solution, a really excellent solution, something where you would go and you would build it and feel like I'm living in a beautiful piece of art, and yeah, you get to stay there for a year, and maybe it would have taken you. See, the thing is with Cobb, it takes a while to build a Cobb, but maybe you could build a Wafati and have a small, tiny Wafati set up and you can move into it in under a month.
That would be the greatest benefit to me out of that would be to first of all, very inexpensive to live there, and then second of all, to learn how to build this building and have people around that know how to do it.
That would be another thing too. I suppose another possible option would be like, what if you found somebody with this kind of land in the Northern California area where you're going to need to be for a while,
right,
for your job, and then you go up there and you build a little teeny tiny Wafati, and then you build a slightly bigger Wafati, and maybe you get the second one done within 6 months of moving onto the land.
Right.
In which case, maybe you can live in the second one for the remainder of the 2 years. And maybe while you're in the second one, you can build a third one. I don't know. I'm making this up as I go.
Okay.
I'm just saying that the idea is that a Wafati is designed in such a way that you shouldn't be able to build it very, very quickly.
Right. Okay. I'll explore that idea. I think currently the plan is... So we have to move there in about a month. So we will find the cheapest apartment we can live in that apartment. Usually you have to sign a year-long lease for a year. And then from there we'll have our bus to live in, or and then we can just rent a piece of property for like $100 a month and live through that bus or whatever.
So I'd like to make a suggestion.
Okay.
And that is that I know of people that work construction and they travel around a lot. And they have like a little, you know, camper trailer thing.
Right.
And they're like not big, not like the really big ones that you see that have like eight beds in them or something.
Right.
But they're not like so small that they, you know, like I'm sure you've seen things that are like crazy small, like the, you know, like it's probably okay for a weekend, but you wouldn't want to live in it.
Right.
There's something that's a little bit bigger than that that could be a little more comfortable. But I know that my brother once pointed one out to me and told me those like always sell for like $500 each, $500 for one of those things, and then you just park it somewhere and you live out of it for a few months in the summertime.
Mm.
And you know summer is just around the corner, especially for Northern California.
Yeah,
it's a thought. I mean, that would be $500 and you got a place to live in all summer long.
That would be incredible.
And you live out of that and you park it right next to wherever it is that you're building, whatever eco building you want to build.
Right.
That might be your longer term thing. and then the bus thing that you mentioned could show up, which I see the picture that you sent me. And yeah, that was my thinking too. That laugh. That's crazy, man.
Okay, so
now how did you come by this bus?
It was inherited.
So you've got some crazy ass hippies that you're related to. I think that's what you just said.
Yes, yeah. So my mom has an organic farm and business, or makes organic body care products, and then my dad is, I wouldn't say a hippie, but he's very. He's a mountain man, that is for sure. You know, both my parents have built their own houses and live off the land, very off grid in both situations. And so this is my dad's, and he inherited it from a friend who was like, "Hey, I don't want this anymore." And so my dad was like, "Hey, do you want this?" I was like, well, I'm looking to live really cheap, so maybe that would be a solution. It would need a lot of work, and he's willing to do that work. So that's where that came about.
Oh, my. Yeah. See, when that guy said, "I don't want this anymore," I think my response would be, "And I don't want it either."
Well, so this guy didn't want it anymore. It's really actually, it's a classic. And if you build it.
Wait a minute. I think to be a classic, it has to be something that a lot of people have one of.
Okay.
But there's, I think to say that this is unique, yeah, that would be a way of describing it. So, okay, what we're looking at is looks like a blue bus.
Old 30s style bus.
Maybe 40s.
40, sure.
Old bus from the 40s with the roof cut off. And then somebody built like a second floor onto it that it made out of wood. So it's been augmented with wood.
Yeah.
It's definitely something where when you see it going down the road, then you say to yourself, you know, I thought I was a hippie.
Yeah.
I believe that suddenly I'm feeling very not a hippie. Like I don't meet the hippie criteria standing next to those guys.
Yeah.
So I also think that this would not go down the road particularly fast. Like you might have a top speed of 40 miles an hour with this thing.
Well,
otherwise, we're not, it would shake apart little pieces.
Yeah, we're not moving that thing until it has a lot of work done. I'll send you a picture. You'll be impressed. Trust me. Mark,
Okay.
So it's strange for me because I am not a hippie. I'm an independent politically. And so that's another topic. So I'm into the prepper kind of thing, and that's another interesting topic to cover. That anyway, but
this could be your bug out bag.
This is my bug out bus.
Bug out bus. Yeah. If it starts. and just looking at it, I think it doesn't start.
It does actually. The engine's.
It does.
It does. It's got a new engine in it actually, and it's
that. So what you're saying is 99% of the value of this thing is in the engine.
Oh, by far, yes, yes. anyway, at any rate, you mark my words, you'll be impressed when it's all done.
Like, I have a gasoline-powered rusty wheelbarrow.
That's right, with a wood house on top.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so, all right, and it's like, okay, I could see that something like this could be fixed up and could be. I was about to say cool, but no, I'm having a hard time. Cool. Somebody with more imagination than me could, I suppose, make this be cool.
As soon as I have the designs, I'll post it in the forums with the original bus and then the designs, and then you can judge it from there. Maybe cool will slip into the mind a little.
Maybe, yeah. We could create a new forum called Humor, and you could put it in there.
Yeah, I'll just throw it in the joke. Yeah, yeah.
It's cool, and then it'll all be good. So I think you should post this picture out to Permies today. I think that this will bring joy to a lot of hearts,
okay.
And especially the part where you say, "This old guy said to my dad, I don't want this anymore. Do you want it?" And make particular note that your dad said, I mean, I think basically your dad said, oh, hell no. but my son, I'll ask him.
No, my dad said, oh, hell yeah, I can put tools in that.
It looks like I could put, you know, I was thinking about getting chicken. This will be fine.
Crushing my dreams.
Well, I mean, my concerns are like, because like right now the picture that you sent me, there's snow there,
mm-hmm.
And I'm kind of looking at it and I'm thinking that it would probably be really cold in the winter and really hot in the summer.
Bear in mind this will be completely redesigned. The top is being stripped off. It will be insulated. It'll be a home. It's going to have a bedroom, which is what the top is, basically. The top loft above the cab is a bedroom.
Okay.
And then the rest is storage up top. And then the bottom is your living dining room area, your kitchen. It has a wood stove in it. And maybe we could put a rocket mass heater in there.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, we'll see what you come up with there.
Anyway, I guess that's more of a fun project that if we did get it done, I think we could live off of it very inexpensively. And then maybe keep it for the future as a way to travel around when we get older. But anyway, the idea is to live as frugally as possible when we move to Northern California, find the cheapest place possible. And my wife works from home, so it needs to be comfortable for her. And then we're saving as much money as possible for the next 5 to 7 years until we can buy our own little 5-acre piece of land or so and move on to that, hopefully in somewhere like Montana.
So now, I believe the last time I talked to you, you were talking about 100 acres, and now you're talking about 5 acres.
Oh, no. I was talking about 100 acres if you gave me $1 million.
Oh, okay. All right.
No, I'm thinking
okay.
More like 5 acres. I want 5 permaculture acres, right? I want to build a food forest on that and eat off my land.
Okay. All right. I get it. That makes more sense to me now. So, yeah, this thing, I think you should, one of the books that you should probably read in the next 6 months or so is going to be The Good Life by Nearing and Nearing. And in The Good Life, the Nearings talk a lot about how they give up on building things out of wood. They build all their structures out of stone. And they say that the reason is that anytime you build a structure out of wood, then you have to maintain it. And as the years pass, you have to do more and more maintenance to keep it, you know, in good enough condition to live in.
Right.
Whereas if you build a structure out of stone, it's done and it lasts forever. And it doesn't require nearly as much maintenance. And this, I'm not saying that you should build the top floor of your bus out of stone. That really wouldn't work. But I think that the point is that while you could make a lovely piece of art here, and I think that there is something to be said for how a lot of there's a lot of stuff going on right now about tiny houses, and it's a tiny house might be something that I mean, I've seen some tiny houses that were really beautiful.
Yeah,
and it might be easier to start with something that's more aligned with the tiny house philosophies that could be mounted onto this truck frame.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly. That could be worth considering. It might actually end up. And so, if I take some of the modern tiny houses that I've seen that have been mounted on trailers so that they can be moved around, I kind of, you know, look at this and I kind of think, wow, you know, that could be a kind of a cool thing where it's like the tiny house is mounted on the truck frame, and which is basically the bus frame,
right?
Instead of being mounted on a trailer frame, and then, you know, with your brand new engine and all, then it's like, you know, fire it up, vroom. So, weird. There's like a little. It's kind of bizarre. If you look at the driver's windshield on your bus picture,
yeah,
is that a face?
The driver's windshield.
Is that like a ghost face? Do, 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 do.
I see it cracked. Oh, the driver's.
Sorry. Driver's. Look at the driver's windshield. There's like a ghost face there.
I do not see a face, but maybe people in the forums will see a face.
Okay. Well, we'll post
I see
it.
What you're saying.
Weird, huh?
That is kind of cool. I think that's the snow reflection, but.
Yeah, I think it's a reflection of trees and stuff somewhere else, but still, it does. It's a face. It's kind of cool.
Wait,
all right.
I'll post a bunch of other pictures of it up there, too, so you can see the other ones. You've only seen one of the pictures.
I've only seen one. Okay.
That's all you needed to see.
That's all, yeah. But, you know, hey, and then one of my favorite books that I used to read to my kids when they were small was called No Room for a Sneeze. And the idea was that the family lived in a single-room cottage and with, like, seven kids or something like that. And it's too crowded. Go talk to the wise man. And actually, this my favorite book, my favorite part of the whole book is that the wise man is this guy with big, crazy-ass hair, and there's a chicken living in his hair. And that's the wise man. So then they go and they ask him, what do we do? It's so stressful. We live in this tiny house. And the wise man says, you got a cow, right? Oh, yeah, we got a cow. Lives out in the barn. Move the cow into the house with you. Nope. I'm the wise man. Go. So they would do that. And then they kept coming back like, it's even worse. And then it's like, move all the farm animals in. And then there's a hobo down in town. Go get him. Have him move in with you. And then finally, the dad goes to the wise man, and he just gives him these looks of exasperation, and he has no words left. And the wise man turns to him and says, pretty crazy, isn't it? And the guy still has no words. And so then he gives him instructions to, like, you know, send the hobo back to town and put all the animals back in the barn and stuff like that. And so then the guy goes back to his house, and suddenly his house seems like a massive palace.
Right.
So if you did the thing, if you got one of those $500 camper things to get you through to the summer, and then you could build a little something there at the new property that buys you a year,
mm-hmm.
then by the time the bus shows up, a year later, then it might feel rather palatial.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
It's a thought. I just made this up.
That's a good thought. I don't know. I would have, but I would be fine with that. Would my wife be fine with that? We will see.
And so your wife has looked at these pictures too, right?
Yes.
And she's like all excited and full of ideas and like, this is going to be so awesome.
She's more like, you got to really fix that thing up for me to live in it. But here are some awesome ideas we could do to it. And so she's thinking it'd be cool in the back to have a greenhouse. So have a greenhouse within it, as well as solar water, and then, of course, the Rocket Mass heater, which would be, oh, I don't know about that one. But anyway, and doing, solar panels for electricity as well.
I would guess that if you guys took this to your California place and then added the greenhouse, you would probably be far happier than if you put a greenhouse on it before driving into California, because the greenhouse glass or whatever probably won't do well on the trip over.
Yeah, and we want it to be something that we can move around, like maybe a week or 2 weeks out of the year, just take it camping or whatever if we want in the future.
So. Right. Or once you buy your land up in Montana, you could drive it up there and park it, and then you're like living in Montana.
Yeah, then done.
There you go. So now I do think that in order for you to hang on to your wife, some of your strategy needs to talk about an awesome livelihood above and beyond the bus, even in the best of shape. So that, you know, the plan is always that the bus is a short-term thing.
Yes. Yeah, and it is. It is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Just thought I'd point that out.
Yeah.
And for a lot of us, I think that, you know, when you're talking about how do I stop being a wage slave or a debt slave or something like that, you know, a lot of it is like you make short-term sacrifices to get out of that,
mm-hmm.
and then you start building your life responsibly.
Right.
And so there's going to be this path of this lesser path that's your exit to get out. And so and boy, is this picture that I'm looking at right now, that's a lesser path. That's some sacrifice there.
It should save us quite a bit of money, I think.
Yeah, it better.
It better be good, some good coming out of that. Yeah, so, well, what we've done so far to strip away all the garbage is we've completely paid off our credit cards. So we removed that debt. We do still have a single car payment, which is getting paid off. And the car is great because it's, you know, it gets 40 miles to the gallon. And, of course it's not an electric, but anyway, we can't afford an electric.
Yeah.
So we've paid off those credit cards. We've cut, we don't have TV anymore. We've cut everything down. All these little services that exist have been cut out except Netflix. Netflix is the only one we kept because we cut the cable. And so we've also lowered our electricity significantly, which is a big feat in Las Vegas because you're either paying for heat in the winter, well, not so much, but you're definitely paying for the AC in the summer. So we cut down that quite a bit.
That's another thing is, like, if you're trying to do AC, I mean, because, yeah, in Las Vegas, it gets so hot. Life without AC would be, like, really unbearable. But then you're thinking, okay, how can I be cool in Las Vegas without giving, you know, hundreds of dollars to the utility companies every month? Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, permaculture does have solutions for that. But not if you live in a townhouse.
Right.
You know, if you're on your own land, we can talk about planting trees. We can talk about hanging things from the ceiling, from the roof lines. We can talk about things that go over the roof to help cool.
Right.
You know, layers of shade.
Yep.
We can build layers of shade and things of that nature. whereas, as well as permanent things, things that you don't have to do. Things that you don't have to, like, do a lot of work for. They just kind of are, you build it once and it's a gift to your future self.
Right.
But, yeah, in a townhouse, it's like, oh, yeah, the HOA won't go for that. Or the all the little townhouses have to look identical on the outside. So it's not like you can go and do things to the outside to help cool it.
Yeah, it all has to be done inside. And, of course, you can't rip down walls or anything like that. And you can't put ugly things in your windows. HOAs are just horrible.
Right. So, yeah, bummer. Boomer.
Yeah.
So, on the other hand, I think we've come up with some good solutions for saving you heat, but and the stuff for staying cool. We've got a huge thread about that out at Permies, about staying cool in the summertime on the cheap.
Yeah. Well, we got the super thick blackout curtains. That was the first thing. Covered all the windows with those so that they're still pretty because they're curtains, but they're blackout and they don't absorb or they don't let the heat in. And then sealed off all the cracks and all the doors so that no AC is escaping. And then fans. We put fans everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's what.
Yeah, find your new level of tolerance for something warmer.
Yeah,
I suppose.
Yep.
Although, yeah.
And we just sit around our house naked a lot.
Okay. Thanks for sharing.
You're
that.
Welcome.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a way. I mean, it gets 130 degrees here.
You're gonna do good in Northern California. You're gonna fit right in. They're gonna love you up there. Well, and that's another thing, too. When you get to Northern California, I think it's going to be a lot cooler. And, you know, in fact, it's going to be a lot less extreme.
Yeah.
So not as cold in the winter and not as hot in the summer.
Oh, and the greatest thing we did to save money, I think this has been the most beneficial, was that every time we bought something, especially food, we put it into a spreadsheet, what we bought, when we bought it, and how much it was. And then when a year has gone by, you know exactly when to buy your food or all the crap you've wasted money on. But the most important thing was knowing when to buy food, when it was in season, when it was the least expensive and where it was the least expensive. That has been hugely beneficial to us. And it didn't take a lot of work.
Hmm.
So we also preserve food. We dry food and we can food. And so we can buy that food in bulk when it's cheapest, and then preserve it.
So, just out of curiosity, how much? What was your average monthly food cost per person?
We were looking monthly about per person $300, $600 for the both of us.
Okay. All right. So I don't know if you ever heard that podcast that we did, which matches up to a thread out of Permies, where we were doing all organic, it was a community house.
Yeah.
And this was like, wow, one of the things about community you never really think about. But we did all organic for a community house, and it was $108 per person per month on average.
Yeah. And if you're buying in bulk, that helps a lot, too.
Right. I mean, most of it was in bulk. I mean, probably more than half the food that we had on hand that we ate was indeed bulk. But, you know, this also included like one or two trips to Whole Foods each week.
Right.
To get, you know, whatever else. But we actually ended up not really putting a whole lot of thought into, you know, like, oh, let's budget and be cheap. Although there was some thought of like, okay, we're going to order from Azure Standard, which sells us oats and beans and rice in 50-pound sacks for a very good price.
Right.
And that's probably where a lot of the savings came from. But I think it's a lot easier to do it when you're trying to feed 11 people than when you're trying to feed two.
Yeah, cooking also becomes very difficult when you're feeding one or two people.
That's true. Then a lot of the foods that you buy reflect that.
Yeah.
Yeah. As opposed to when you've got, like, somebody's going to cook every breakfast and dinner and there'll be leftovers, then it's kind of like, okay, now we can focus more on buying ingredients rather than pre-prepared foods, kind of a thing.
Yeah, and the reason the food, there's a couple reasons why the food costs a lot out here. One is that we're eating organic. We're also eating, both my wife and I eat the primal diet, so it's just vegetables and meat, no wheats and crackers and chips and the cheap foods like that. And then the other thing is that we're in Vegas, and Las Vegas food tends to cost lots more, especially in Whole Foods areas.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. That makes sense.
So that was the up. And we can't. The only way we were able to find to beat that was to buy in bulk when things are in season and the cheapest, and then preserve it as much as possible. So now we're eating preserved foods, which isn't as healthy, but I think it's still healthier than eating the potato chips and crap.
Okay. All right. So, and of course, the next big thing, if you're moving in 1 month, then hopefully where you're moving to is going to feature land. And wherever it is, wherever you're going, you mentioned at one point the cheapest apartment money can buy. But I'm thinking, like, if you're going to make the move and stuff, you know, if possible, move onto land. And hopefully move, you know, and it would be better. I mean, I'm a big fan of community, and I think a lot of the stuff that I say about community doesn't carry a lot of weight until you've actually lived in community and had firsthand experience with the drama. And then I think that the strategy is to find out how do you harvest all the upsides of community,
mm-hmm.
and attempt to mitigate the downsides, the drama of community.
So my wife has a problem with the community thing. She likes privacy, and I imagine you're not going to get much privacy. Is that accurate?
I would have to say it depends on how you define privacy. Those of you walking around naked in your house.
Yeah.
But no, I would have to say, and this is one that I hear a lot, is like, oh, I can't do community because I value my privacy.
Right.
Well, hey, check it out. Where do you live now? In a townhouse? What does that mean? Doesn't that mean that there's, like, another townhouse kind of super glued to your townhouse?
Oh, yeah. There's I don't mean privacy in the outside. I mean just in the inside. She works at home, so she has to have her own office where nobody talks to her or there's no noise. And so she's got her own enclosed office down there that's, like, soundproofed.
Okay, so I want to say that you know, there are ways to design community in such a way that you never have any privacy.
Right.
And in fact, that movie that's at the theaters now kind of demonstrates that, oh, we don't believe in doors, you know, and so it's like, okay, yeah, you don't get to have any privacy in that. But that movie is trying to paint contrasts and basically come up with the comedy,
right,
that is intentional community, and to find all the funniest parts of intentional community and wave those in people's faces so they can have a good laugh.
So I'm trying to imagine that the daily activities or your daily life in a community, what happens? What are you...
Okay, so one thing that there could be in a community, I mean, like, let's say you design, I mean, there are types where you design the entire structure, the entire house or whatever yourself. I mean, one place I lived in was like an 11-bedroom or a 10-bedroom house, and there were only like 8 people living in it, so there were some bedrooms that were just not in use, and I rented a room, but I ended up getting a whole wing of the house to myself because, you know, there was in this wing, there was only one other room and no one was in that room.
Right.
So it's kind of like, you know, I didn't rent the other room, but effectively there's this kind of like another room that you go through to get to my room. And so I could have, like, decorated that as a sitting room or something like that, I suppose.
Right.
But then we all shared a common kitchen, which was this massive and glorious, amazing kitchen. So it's possible that you could effectively have, in a community, you could have not only your own room or just a really huge room that's your room, but you could have a sitting room and then a bedroom and then share a common kitchen. I mean, for the amount of privacy that you and your wife require, do you require privacy when you cook food?
No.
Do you require... I would imagine that when you get to a certain age, it's kind of like, you know what? I'm sick of sharing a bathroom, and I can afford a bathroom of my own.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that.
Yeah, I think that would be a big deal for her. Not for me. I'm used to it.
Right, and I think that there's other schools of thought too. I mean, one is it's like I lived in another community where. There were several guys, young guys, sharing one room, and then they shared a bathroom with several other guys.
Right.
But the thing is that they were cutting their expenses to the quick, and by doing this, now they didn't have to come up with very much money each month in order to pay the rent.
Right.
And so now instead of trying to go out and get a 40-hour week job, just to get by, they could kind of choose. They had the freedom to choose. They could work 10 hours a week to kind of meet their expenses, or they could work 40 hours a week and build up their own grub stake. You know, I thought that was pretty impressive. And so it's kind of like, yeah, you can choose what your level of expense versus privacy is.
Right.
And so, yeah, I would say that it's possible to be in a community where you have a large room or a couple of rooms and your own private bathroom, or you could be in community in such a way that you share a room with somebody else and you share a bathroom with a whole bunch of somebody else's, or maybe share several bathrooms with somebody else's. And then there's also types of community where it's like you're actually in a whole other building and you have a teeny tiny kitchen in your whole other little tiny building, but like when you really want to have some comfort, you can go and use the big kitchen and the big house and the big living room in the big house. Maybe there's even a media room in the big house where everybody kind of hangs out and watches movies once in a while.
Yeah, that's kind of the community I was exposed to in Montana. There's this very nice community where they have two very large places where everybody lives, and then they have one giant building where the cooking and the entertainment and the meetings and that stuff happens. So if I wanted three of those rooms for myself and maybe a bathroom, how does the cost come in? And for food, do you like just throw $200 a month and you get food, or do you buy your own grocery? I don't understand.
I mean, it's going to change from community to community.
Okay.
Now, granted, I mean, you could shop for a long time to find a community that's going to be a fit for you.
Right.
Or you can kind of, instead of that, you can do the thing that you're currently already planning, which is to go to Northern California and try and figure something out where you're independent and just as cheap as you can possibly be while being independent.
Right.
But usually when you go into community, everything ends up way cheaper. You know, I mean, like, for example... You could look into you're thinking like, okay, we need to rent an apartment, and so you're probably going to get there, and your cheapest possible. I mean, is a studio apartment going to cut it, or are you guys going to need to get a, a one bedroom or a two bedroom because one of the bedrooms has to be the office ish space for your wife?
Yeah, we're looking for a two or three bedroom house with a bathroom. In a living room and a kitchen. And then the cheapest we can find. And what we found was we're looking at about $700 a month, I think, for the cheapest we can find. And those are usually actually a house, like a very small house on a tenth of an acre lot or whatever.
Well, $700 does seem really cheap for a three-bedroom to me.
Yeah, that was the cheapest we've and these are like... They're not nice houses.
Yeah, okay.
Well, you know, we're looking at like $1,700 a month if we want a nice place, but we're not willing to spend that much.
Okay, all right. Well, when going around in the Seattle area, the Missoula area, stuff like that, and the different areas that I've lived in and gotten familiar with, so it seems like usually if you're going to rent a house – like the tiniest, cheapest houses are typically around $800 to $900 a month. And you're right. They want a one-year lease.
Yep.
And at the same time, renting a room is typically about $500 a month, maybe $400 a month. And it's month to month. It has to be month to month because, you know, if you do a one-year lease but you end up hating each other, then, you know, how do you get out of that?
Well, so, in Vegas, the apartments are they're a year-long lease. You sign a year lease.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So apartments.
Oh, you're talking about a community room.
Apartments or so apartments or houses are going to be like one-year leases.
Right, right.
You know, minimum. And then if you're going to rent a room or if you're going to join a community, then it's typically a month-to-month arrangement.
Oh, okay.
So, and on top of that, rather than, I mean, like, you know, like if you're going to go out and you're going to rent a two-bedroom apartment or rent a two-bedroom house, that's usually starting at $1,000. It's been my experience. Now, granted, I think Seattle and Missoula are pretty expensive markets because a lot of people want to live there. But if you're going to rent a room, it's usually somewhere around, you know, averaging about $500, I'd say, average.
Okay.
Depending on a bunch of different factors and stuff like that. And but basically if you're going to compare renting two rooms in a house versus renting your own two bedroom place, then okay, yeah, you're going to end up with about a wash.
Okay.
You know, so and then of course the thing I'm trying to advocate is like, for example, if the two of you were to rent a room in, and let's say you rented a larger room in a house or in a community, it might be $500 a month, and now you were saying $700, so maybe it's possible in that particular area where you're talking about $700, maybe it would be about half of that, but then you would be saving, you know, $350 a month for a year. And that would apply to your grubstake.
Yeah. And do those prices include utilities and food?
Usually when you rent a room, about half the time it includes utilities, and half the time utilities are on top of that. But a lot of the cost of utilities is like just being connected. Plus, the moment you do something like this, your footprint on utilities gets smaller.
Right.
So it's like if you're gonna almost always your utilities costs get cut in half. Now I remember at one place we were at where the utilities were shared, and the utilities were typically $20 a month per person. But we had like that's where we had 11 people under one roof.
Right.
So, but then, you know, and then when you get down to like where you've got one person living under one roof, oftentimes it's going to be a lot more because then you've got your electricity, you've got your internet junk and, whatever your heat source is and, you know, all those kinds of things. But I don't know. So all I'm trying to do is to be, I think that the thing to do is that if you're looking at your plans and your machinations and stuff, and you're thinking, okay, we want to be able to build a grubstake and we want to be able to get onto some land and be free and live permaculture lives, then it's like, okay, so how do we get from point A to point B? I'm thinking that not only are we talking about building up our financial picture,
mm-hmm.
But we're also talking about, let's not forget to gain experience.
Yeah.
So I think good experiences to gain are going to be, let's grow some veggies. Let's grow a big garden. Let's not just grow in a container garden or just a small garden. Let's try to grow things on scale. And like, let's see if we can come up with half of our diet.
Right.
Grow half of our own diet. I mean, I think these are good, noble goals. And granted, in a permaculture system, you're going to be doing a lot more perennials, a lot more trees, a lot more shrubs. And if you're living someplace and you're thinking, we're going to be here maybe only 2 years, then it's kind of hard to make that kind of
commitment yeah.
to the plants. But I think let's do that. And then also, I'm going to advocate, which you guys will probably turn down. You guys will probably choose to not do it. But all I can say is that my path has led me to think that the best solutions are going to be community-based solutions, But of course, I think that the reluctance is valid, is entirely valid, because there's a reason why people get to a certain age, like when they were 19, then it's like, oh yeah, they had housemates and roommates, and they lived that particular way. And then they moved on to where they lived by themselves, and they never went back.
Right.
Sure, that was cheap, and sure, there were perks, but man, there was a lot of crazy, too.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't want any more of that crazy. I want to buy my way out of that crazy. I'd rather part with the money than have that crazy again. And I think that is an extremely valid point. And at the same time, so I want to embrace that. Hold tight onto that feeling of, I am willing to pay to not have any more of that crazy.
Right.
All right. Let's hold on to that. Okay. Let's hold that close. And I want to talk about when you live on a farm, and there's a lot of farm chores to do, and you've got chickens and goats and pigs and cattle, then it's kind of like, okay, then you get this idea of like, hey, my friend that was my roommate for 20 years ago said, hey, you want to come and stay on my yacht for a week? Do you say, I can't because of the critters?
Right.
Or do you say, hell yes, because I've got community, and I can leave for a week, and everything will continue to be cool without me here.
Right.
On top of that, what if the people that you sit down and share a table with for two or three meals a day are like fucking awesome people?
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, your knowledge on permaculture and all other things grows at a pace that's 40 times greater than at college or at any other point in your life.
Right.
Because you're sharing meals and you're working with people on the farm and you're doing the things that you love to do, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I mean, there are things that can be gained in this space that are so huge and awesome. So it's like, okay, so let's also take that, which may be an experience that you have not yet experienced. And of course, that's completely overlooking all of the crazy downsides.
Right.
But we're holding that close in our other hand. So we've got these two things that, one are the massive potential benefits that maybe you haven't seen yet, which I'm trying to advocate, I'm trying to express.
Right.
And at the same time, there's the history of like living with other people is a really, really bad idea. And so then it's like, okay, so what we really want to do is to come up with a scenario where we've got all of these good sides, all this awesomeness, and we take the crazy bad sides, and can we somehow shrink that by a factor of 20? Because I think that most communities are set up in such a way that there's going to most that most people end up leaving them because that downside package ends up being larger than the upside package. Like they go there, they do experience those upsides. Those upsides are there. Those upsides are awesome. They are amazing. And at the same time, the drama and the crazy and all the downsides package ends up much larger than the upsides.
Right.
Just exactly as you remember it from your college days. And so then it's like, okay, so then the thing that I'm trying to do is come up with strategies where you can shrink that downside package so small that, okay, it's there, but it's just trivial. And the upside package is massive.
Right.
And there are a few places where we see that actually happening. And so, like, you know, we need to focus on those places and gather our lessons and try and go that way. Although, when you're in California, you know, if you can find intentional community and you can be part of an intentional community there, if you choose to travel this path, which I suspect that you won't choose to do that, but if you do, then it's kind of like at least you'll have gained the knowledge and experience of the upsides package. At the same time, there are people who will stay at community where the downsides, are the crazy and the drama and stuff are massive, but somehow they are just durable that way. They, you know, I'm not one of them. I'm not durable. In fact, I am very durable, but my durability makes it so that they have to eject me. Because, you know, I won't do what they say, and that's part of human nature, and, you know, whatever. But that's just me. I'm trying to paint a picture to say, during the next few years, as you're preparing to move on to buy your own land and move on to your own land, then yeah, you're going to gain a lot of knowledge from a variety of different sources. And let's see about getting that hands-on knowledge with the soil, possibly with a variety of critters. Hopefully, working with somebody who's very knowledgeable in this space already, and preparing for your future through this experience. And another great experience to add would be to have gotten that bit of experience of like how awesome it is to be in a community where you can build your knowledge so rapidly by sharing that table with people.
Yeah.
And really do that massive growth thing, just showing up, being aware that, oh yeah, by the way, there's going to be a much larger downside, and be prepared for that.
And I imagine you build some pretty strong friendships.
And friendships, and you know, I imagine that the opposite too, you know,
right, enemies.
There's different personalities and stuff. There are some people who are always going to get along with damn near everybody, but you know, it is a case where you go into a situation like that, and there's going to be a lot of growth experiences. But boy, it sure is hard to be an artist when you're basking in crazy, because then the crazy takes precedent. The crazy makes your artist wither.
Right.
And so it's kind of like, and hence the need for privacy. But I think the point I want to make, which now hopefully I'll finish off the thing that we started with, was it is possible to have privacy in community, and you can have all the privacy that you want.
Okay.
And like, for example, like if you are in an external building, and then there's the community building over there, you could just stay in your external building all the time. Although I would think that a community would eventually want to transition you out if you're not interacting with the community, so that hopefully somebody can move into that space who's going to be more participatory in the community.
Yeah.
So if you're very reclusive, very private people, then yeah, community is probably not a good thing to try to be in with.
Not very. We're just concerned. So a big concern is that I imagine in these communities you have certain responsibilities. That you, like if maybe one week you're on kitchen duty where you have to help cook, things like that. So my wife works 9 to 6 p.m. every day from home. But during those hours, she can't be disturbed. So she could do everything after that. Me, on the other hand, I travel a lot, and I'll be gone for 2 weeks at a time and then back for a week, and doing nothing when I'm back, but gone for 2 weeks. Or randomly throughout the day, I'll have to jump onto a conference call, and sometimes those can be unexpected. So does that run into a large issue in community where you have these responsibilities?
The answer to that question is the same as the answer to most questions.
Depends on the community.
It depends on a lot of things. Yeah, so it's going to depend on the community. It's going to depend on the crazy package that they've set up. I would think that one of the things to do, like let's say that you guys had all your needs met with one room, and you rented this one room for, let's say, $400 a month, and your utilities and whatnot were included in it, and you got a big patch of land, and you got to share the table with all these people, and you chipped into the food budget. And yeah, part of the agreement is that the two of you had to cook three meals per week.
Right.
All right, so let's start there. You have to cook three meals per week, the two of you. And then how many meals per week do you cook right now?
Well, it depends on if I'm here or not.
Let's average it out. The average week for any 10-week span of time works out to be how many meals do you – I mean, basically where I'm trying to go is that by going down this path, A, you'll probably see your food bill reduced a lot.
Yeah.
And B, you'll probably end up cooking less often than you cook right now.
Right.
So it's you know, so that one ends up, I think, being not all that hard.
And if I'm gone, I can probably trade cooking days or something with someone else.
Some communities, they don't really share meals that often.
Okay.
I mean, I kind of think that that's like, I have a hard time calling it a community if you don't share meals very often.
Right.
But you know, that's and Diane Lee Christian, who's you know, got those books out on community and was the editor for Communities Magazine for so long and everything like that. I remember talking to her once, and she's like, you know, she doesn't really like intentional community anymore, like the phrase intentional community, because the meaning has been so watered down.
Right.
And it's like it could mean anything anymore. And so she's been big on eco-villages. She likes eco-village. Apparently eco-village has a very exact meaning, although I've been to some places that have been called eco-villages, and it's like, what the fuck is eco about this place?
Right.
And it's I don't see eco, and I don't see village. I see some buildings with T-111 sightings.
Right.
It's like, you know, probably the townhouse thing that you live in now is probably more of an eco-village than the thing I saw that was labeled an eco-village.
All right.
So I'm not sure if that's getting watered down also. So anyway, all right. So there, I've blathered on and on and on. And we're answering questions. Did I answer even one question?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was more to update and share kind of what we're doing to save, and I think that was great.
Okay. When it comes to investing, I don't think I'm the guy at all. I think a much wiser person would be Jacob at the Early Retirement Extreme.
Right.
Stuff.
Yeah.
And I know Jack talks a lot about far more prepper kind of stuff, like, you know, gold and silver and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
and we wanted to discuss kind of the prepper, why there's such a hatred of preppers versus permaculture people, or why there's conflict there, but maybe we should save that for another podcast.
I think let's take care of it right now, because my first thought is there is.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's more of the communities, and it maybe goes to the same kind of thing where people are calling something that it really isn't. But it tends to be that the right wingers are more on the prepper side, and then the left wingers are on the permie side.
I don't see that. Like, I think my I imagine that when permaculture, when I first started looking into permaculture, it did seem like it was rather hippie intensive. But I did see some people where it's like, they didn't seem very hippie-ish.
Right.
And now, at this point in time, I see permaculture. I mean, I think that the percentage of hippies has dwindled. Like, whereas permaculture, probably, you know, in 2004, permaculture was probably a good 70% hippies.
Right.
I think permaculture now, like, all those hippies are still there, but more people have, like, gotten interested in permaculture. I think it's dwindled down to probably be about, you know, 25% hippies.
Yeah, and I think there's a strong relationship from, like, Jack Spirko's The Survivalist podcast and Paul Wheaton's Permies. I think there's a strong bond there within the community, and that's awesome to come together.
I know I feel supportive of preppers, and I know that I'm sick to death of talking about politics.
Yeah.
And basically my philosophies in politics are like the Democrats, the Republicans are all pretty much the same, and they're all lying to me.
Yeah.
You know, so I kind of you know, I don't understand the reason for the argument other than to be a distraction from what's really going on.
Yes.
I kind of think of the Republicans and the Democrats as being puppets.
Yeah.
And the puppet master is the same guy.
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like it just seems like who gives a shit? You know, they're just it's just a circus made of scary clowns. Just you know, go on and do something else.
Yeah.
That's a big part of it. And, you know, and of course, there's decisions that are made that are frustrating, but I think it's frustrating across the board. I think that there are people out there that are easily persuaded by weird-ass arguments just because, well, if it's on the TV, it must be true.
Yeah.
And I do have a lot of venom towards Fox News because I think that's very puppety, you know, and it's kind of like the stuff that they're saying there is because they have an agenda behind what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, they say fair and balanced, which is just comedy. So I don't see this friction.
Well, the friction I don't think is political per se. It's just that some of the ideas tend to lean one political way or the other. But, for example, I think preppers are a lot less concerned about the effects of the carbon footprint, a lot less concerned about the carbon footprint, but they do the same things that help the carbon footprint, if there is one, but they're not for affecting. So they'll set up solar panels because it greatly helps them instead of doing it because it helps the environment.
Right. Okay. I'm going to have to say, like, okay, let's look at your bus for a moment.
Right.
I could totally see that infested with hippies, and I can totally see it infested with your most... Because when I think of preppers, I think of a lot of hippies are also hippies and preppers.
Yeah.
Okay, so, like, I could also see it infested with preppers that are, like, the furthest from the hippies. Like, very, 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 you know, conservative... Redneck. So you got your hippies, and on the opposite end of the spectrum, you got your rednecks... Maybe you could even say hillbillies,
right?
You know, so I could see either end of the spectrum occupying this thing that you sent me this picture in with the ghost driver.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know. I think Jack's stuff is really great, and that it's really embrace. I mean, Jack does have a lot of anger towards people that are idiots,
yeah.
and by his standards, and I don't listen to a lot of his podcasts because I'm not like a podcast consumer, but I've listened to some, and it's like, you know, I really kind of find myself agreeing with Jack a lot, and I if nothing else, I like listening to the stuff that Jack says because I feel like there's a lot of stuff that Jack says that I've never heard before. And I do believe that Jack is a very savvy, smart guy. So it's like, that's interesting. And then there's a lot of stuff that's just way over my head, and I just don't. But all right, so yes, there's that. At Permies, I don't see a lot of the rednecks fighting the hippies.
Right. Yeah. Where this all came about was that I posted something on Reddit, and it was either the permaculture or the either the permaculture or the homesteading one, and it talked about prepping somewhere in there, and the guy's comment was, if preppers are coming to this Reddit, I'm leaving. And I was like, why? It's the same thing.
I think that a lot of that is that Reddit really makes a safe haven for trolls, people who just want to say provocative things.
Yeah.
You know? So I think, you know, so I can imagine somebody going up there and saying on Reddit, saying something like, if these fuckers are showing up, I'm out of here. I can't stand these people. I hate them all. But then they don't. They just like saying that for the you know, the flame of it all, for the for just, you know, because Reddit effectively gets reactions out of nasty, and so people just like being nasty on Reddit.
I thought they were genuine, but maybe it was just a troll.
I imagine that they are genuine. I imagine that there are a lot of genuinely nasty people on Reddit, because, you know, so here I am. I'm the primary moderator for the Homestead subreddit.
Uh-huh.
And it's like somebody comes down there and they get all nasty. And for a while we had somebody that would just go through the subreddit and, like, you know, report everything or just throw 20 downvotes on everything. I mean, everything would be fine, and suddenly everything would have like 20 downvotes.
Right.
So it's clearly one guy and his sock puppet army showed up.
Yeah.
And it's like, boy, I'd like to find out who that guy is and who his sock puppets are, and ban them all from my subreddit. They can still go to all the other subreddits. It's like, hey, you know, I just don't need that here.
It's Monsanto.
And it might be that. It could be some oil company or some, you know, who knows what.
Yeah.
Or it's just some guy, some nut.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, but the thing is Reddit's all set up to say, we love the nuts. We love the trolls. We love the screwballs. We love the angry people. We reward all of that horrible behavior. All that, every kind of horrible behavior you can come up with, we endorse it and reward it, and we don't. And I think it'd be great if moderators could say, hey, who's doing all this downvoting? And I'm going to ban them, and I'm going to ban their IP from this subreddit.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, this is what I do at Permies. I ban people left. Somebody comes along and says, you're a bunch of fucking nitwits. Delete.
Yeah.
Ban.
Yeah.
There we go. And now we have hardly anybody ever showing up saying nasty shit anymore.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like, so now when decent people show up and all they want to do is have a respectful, wholesome conversation, they can. and we get – and then all – somebody wrote to me recently and said, like, all permaculturists are a bunch of nasty shitheads, but I like what Paul Wheaton has to say. And I kind of thought – and they were saying something about, like, PRI, and I was at a PRI once, and I got involved in some argument. I made a podcast about it, and it was like, well, these are all the people that I banned.
They're all just flocking to PRI.
They all went to PRI, yeah. And so there was at least – but you know what? I know the guys that run PRI, and they're awesome guys, but I think what it is that they've been like, oh, we're all about being open, and we're all about – limiting censorship and allowing an open discourse. And then it's like the second you do that, then you've got all this ugly stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to say, no, I'm not allowing, in fact, I'm being really picky. I'm being so picky that I want to ban people at the drop of a hat. I'm going to be very sensitive and very quick to ban. So, wow, you know what? I just realized, what question am I answering? what are we talking about?
We were talking about the preppers and the...
Oh, right.
Yeah.
I think that there's in the hippie world, there are a lot of really, really wonderful people that are just awesome, that are just so incredibly awesome. And there's also some in the hippie world that do a lot of that hate in the name of love stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like they're saying, because I love you, I have to kill you. You know, to make the world a better place, then I have to hate on George Bush, and I have to hate on all these programs, and I have to hate on all the people that do this, and hate. But it's because I love you, and it's because I think everybody should be full of love, and everybody should love everybody else, and I'm going to hate those people. And so it's like it's this weird, twisted, kind of freaky, scary thing. And at the same time, out there on the opposite of the spectrum, you've got your rednecks, you know. And I really think that the beautiful thing about Fox News is that if you're going to live in a small community in a red state, then you can turn on the radio, you hear what Rush Limbaugh has to say, and then you can go to the coffee shop and visit with all these other lovely people, and you know what to say. You've been given your script for the day.
Right.
And now you know what to say to be able to get along with your community and have a lovely community experience. And for a lot of people, having friends is more important than, you know, having independent thought.
Right.
Because independent thought will just piss off your friends. And so, you know, hey, look, I've got all these friends because I got my script this morning from Rush Limbaugh. I know what to say. And so they have community. They get along. They don't kill each other. They don't stab each other. And that's kind of important.
Right.
And granted, I think that a lot of that's kind of a lot of the stuff they've signed up for is really crazy, but hey, you know, that's his choice. And you're right. And a lot of that message that they've been set up is we've got to hate on the hippies, got to hate on the Democrats, hate on the liberals, hate, and that's unfortunate. But I think that there's also a lot of people that are signed up for the conservative package or for the libertarian package, and they don't listen to Fox News, they don't listen to really, you know, a lot of the media they don't listen to at all. They have independent thought, and they're standing up for what they believe is good and right and decent, and they're not hating on people. There's a lot of people that are just awesome people in that space.
Oh yeah, yep.
And they're not hating on the hippies. They're not hating on the other people.
Yeah.
And so so basically, yeah, you can go out to a website and they allow and support hate.
Yeah.
And nasty. And Reddit's one of those places. And then you go to Permies, and we don't. You know, people start saying nasty shit. I delete it, and then I ban them.
Yeah.
And we've got a few people who've said some things that I've deleted, and I think that in time they'll get better, so I haven't banned them. And at the same time, we've had some people that were on for like a year, and they'd written like 1,000 posts, and they seemed to be getting better, and then they just, you know, and then we ended up banning them.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's always this thing of like trying to make the best of it. But you're saying that you see these two sides, and I'm saying that actually all I see is that there's some icky people in both camps. And there's a lot, and for every icky person, I think there's a lot more good and decent people. I think a lot of the good and decent people are silent.
Yeah.
They're, you know, I know. I was talking to Mark Vandermeer the other day. He says he comes out to Permies every day. And I mean, like, this guy is a master at converting a dry gully into a creek.
Right.
This is his day job. And he has superpowers in this space. And he's got so much to teach us, but he's just a quiet guy. And I've run into I don't know how many people that just come out and they read and read, and they're there every day reading and digesting and learning and building up their knowledge. And so these people are definitely not the hatesters that you're concerned about.
Right.
But I'm here to tell you, I think that there's far more of them than there are people who actually post. I mean, here's another thing to think about. We've talked a lot in my podcast about arrogance. And I'm going to stand right up and say I believe I may be the king of arrogance. On the other hand, anytime anybody writes a single post, the moment they've written one post, they've signed up for the arrogance package. Because is it not arrogant to believe that anybody in the world gives a shit about what you have to say?
Right.
So the truly humble people are the people who never post. On the other hand, if nobody ever posted, we wouldn't move forward at all.
Yep.
You can't move forward without those posts.
Yep.
We've got to have the exchange of information to move forward. So we need those arrogant people. We need them. And then, of course, it is a bit of a challenge. It is difficult. It is hard at first to get in. I mean, when we've been trained, when our entire society trains everybody to be so nasty, and they reward crazy and nasty, our society rewards that awful behavior so richly,
yeah.
Then it's difficult to come together and be pleasant to move forward. And to move forward with logic and reason as opposed to hateful, nasty remarks.
Yeah, and I guess the whole point is that I think everybody's a lot more alike than they think. And what's focused on in the media and things like that are really picking on these little issues that don't really matter, when ultimately I think we're all about the same thing, or at least most people are for the same kind of things.
I think there's a lot of truth to that. I think that if we can somehow bypass the bullshit, I think that a lot of people will. In fact, I do believe that the core to all conflict is a difference of knowledge set. You know, assuming that somebody is not particularly nefarious, like I'm going to kill all of you and take your money, and that's my mission. I'm going to, you know, kill you all. I mean, we don't have anybody like that. We have people that are like, you know, basically saying that they wish for good for themselves and good for others. That if they have the same knowledge set, there is no conflict.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, I feel like a big part of my ongoing mission is to project my knowledge set, because then I'll have more people that I can not just only get along with, but these other people using their creative powers and their knowledge sets that are outside of my knowledge set, we can all collectively move forward. Or at least I can move forward, so it's a selfish thing. If I tell you my knowledge set, and you know my knowledge set so well, that then you know what parts are not in my knowledge set, and you can feed that back to me.
Right.
But when we come together, and it's like we're going to try a whole new thing that neither of us have tried, and if we have very different knowledge sets, we're going to have conflict in how we try to come up with solutions for this new thing we're going to try.
Right.
But if we have knowledge sets that are almost identical, then we're probably going to come up with the exact same solutions. No conflict. So I think that the way a lot of intentional communities have this big thing about conflict resolution. How do they manage their conflict resolution? Well, I think that the first step in conflict resolution is to minimize there ever being any conflict to begin with.
Right.
And I think that the first step is throw out consensus. You know, and the second step is to work towards everybody getting into the hive mindset, so that way everybody has the same knowledge set.
Yeah.
So, all right. I imagine that, yes, there are places still. I mean, I know, like, Reddit's an awesome example of how there is so much friction and conflict. On the other hand, Reddit has, like, what, 40 million people. So if you're thinking, I want to change the world, it's kind of hard to do it without Reddit.
Right.
Reddit is a great place to feed in my stuff in an effort to change the world.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of like you got to learn the ropes of Reddit to get, and then you just got to know that it is a troll fest at Reddit. And I'm sure you saw the stuff that was out there in the what was the permaculture subreddit?
Yep.
Yeah, and so it's kind of like, you know, but that doesn't bother me all that much. The only thing that bothers me is when I go to post something and it'll be doing fine and suddenly it gets 40 downvotes,
yeah,
which you know is one guy in his sock puppet army.
Right.
And it's kind of like, that's not cool.
Yeah, you just hurt the rest of everybody else that would benefit from this knowledge.
Right. But then, of course, you know, if they're a corporate troll, then they're serving their corporate master.
Yep.
And they're, you know, they get paid to do that.
Yeah.
So, anyway... all right, so I really think that we're not. I mean, I would say that my podcast, my web empire, is serving hippies and rednecks and hillbillies and libertarians and conservatives and liberals and all of them pretty equally, and some of that's from the no politics-ish thing. And some of it's from other things, like, you know, when you post something at a Permies, you are not allowed to suggest that anybody on Permies is anything less than perfect.
Yeah.
You know, these kinds of things, I think that we're all getting along pretty good. I think a lot of people might be surprised to learn that some of the people that they like on Permies could turn out to be of a radically different political philosophy than their own.
I agree. Yeah, I think there's a lot of because of the control over the forums, it stifles a lot of that conflict that doesn't need to be there anyway.
There you go.
Yeah.
So have we covered your concerns here?
Yeah, we conquered it.
Awesome. I think that in some parts of the world it's getting worse. but in our part of the world, and on Permes at least, in the Permes Empire, I think it's all it's almost non-existent. It's so small.
Yeah.
Granted,
yeah.
I see stuff that you don't see.
Right.
And then I make it so that you'll never see it.
Yeah, and it's great for me because then I don't have to. I know I can go into that community, share the knowledge that I want to share, and receive the knowledge I want to receive without having to deal with all the negative criticism and such.
Right. And a lot of thanks goes to the staff at Permes. There's like a dozen people from all parts of the world that are popping into Permes throughout the day, and when they see something nasty, they do a nastyectomy.
Yep.
And they, you know, and it's all along the lines of what I would do if, you know, and then they tell me that they did this, and I can go look at it and say, yep, you did the right thing. Awesome.
Yeah, that's great.
So I think that's such a huge and important component in 2012 that you know, obviously the people who manage Reddit don't agree with my philosophies. That's, they get to manage their site however they want.
Yep.
All right, what else we got? Anything?
No, we covered everything in mind. Do you have any things you want to throw out there? Any news?
News. I think the biggest thing that is a news-ish component is the stuff about the CFL experiment. I think we're on day 105, and that last CFL is still going. And it's like, man, I just – when's it going to hurry up and die? I'm still cobbling together the rest of the video for the big CFL video. But I really need to get into like – oh, we've got like a dozen podcasts in the hopper right now. So we're like ahead by a dozen as opposed to like not that long ago – we had no podcasts in the hopper, and no videos edited and ready to go. So now we're at no videos are edited and ready to go, but we've got like a dozen podcasts in the hopper.
And I hope a part of that is because people are starting to engage with you and help you with some of the things that you have to take care of, so that you have more time to focus on doing these podcasts and getting the information out there to us.
There has. I mean, you've helped me a lot. I mean, you've also explored areas that I've never even thought of, and getting, you know, the stuff out. That's been so great. I mean, so you've been taking a lot of the problems that I've been having, or a lot of the things that show up in my inbox. I've been farming out to you, and you've been taking care of them. And then, of course, Susie Bean is taking care of the podcast, and she always has bits and bobs that she takes care of here and there. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure I'm forgetting somebody, but I do know that the staff out at Permes and the forums, they're putting a lot of work into the forums to keep those going well. And then the folks out at Code Ranch, the big software engineering site, they're constantly updating our forum software, and they have been just awesome at listening to input from folks at Permes about modifications to the forum software. So they've been doing a lot of work. So yeah, there are people all over the place. I know that there have been several people that have been posting my stuff out at Reddit.
Mm-hmm.
And which has brought in a fair bit of traffic. That's been lovely. And there's been people that have been helping out with how do we do the 50 million Hugo Culture articles. There have been people that have been massaging my article for Hugo Culture into a print format. There have been there's just been tons of things, just gobs of stuff going on. And it's been a little mind-blowing to stay on top of it. And I've not been staying on top of it very well.
And you've been hearing a lot of stories of people sharing the fact that you exist with other people and bringing those people in.
There's been a lot of that. So I know I probably get 20 emails a day from people saying, I was at a meeting and I told people about Permes there. And or I posted this on my Facebook page, or I, you know. And so it's you know, there's just tons and tons of little things going on. I know I got an email on Friday. Somebody recommended that I get interviewed for a radio show or podcast or something that seems to have a very big audience, and that's getting worked out. I know I received a book in the mail where somebody just said, "Don't mention my name, but but here's a book I really loved. I really love your podcast. Here's a book." And it's like a book I've never heard of. So I have this extra book. If I look at that.
Cool.
So it's, I don't know.
But spreading the word is a great help.
Yeah. And, you know, I really enjoy the idea that 10,000 people each tell three people.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it's awesome if we can get into the big media somehow. But yeah, I feel very passionate about, like, telling more people about permaculture. And I just kind of, whenever I see something in mainstream media and it's like, hey, look, somebody put up solar panels, I'm kind of thinking, yeah, they did that in 1970.
Yeah.
You know, it was news then. it was a big deal in 1970. So I'm just kind of thinking, hey, how about a mention of rocket mass heaters or hugelkultur or Wafadi? Or, I mean, there's a list of things that we have that are like, you know, stuff that's not showing up in the news.
Right.
And so how about some at, huh? But, you know, I have no idea how to connect with these people. Although in the thread about 50 million, we're getting some people with that do know and are making suggestions, and I got to follow up with that. I got it. All right. You want to do the sign off?
Sure. If you like this sort of thing, head out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about living frugal, community living, and jumping into permaculture. All the time.
All the time.